This is Rachadix After Hours.
Hello, dear listeners, to episode 3 and 100 of Rack Addicts After Hours. I'm sure there's a language somewhere that formats their numbers 3 and 100. Maybe it's German. I don't know. But you've got Ben and you've got Pete in your ears today, and I hope you're doing well. We always start these codpasts off with our weekly update. I'm sitting in front of some of Pete's. Do you want to crack on with that?
Yes, at last, the black modular case is finished. And
it does
presented for your
very pro
viewing now.
So, if you were tuning in last episode, we were talking about the weird, crackly, rubbly paint situation that looks kind of like Tolex. How did that go? Because it looks great.
Remarkably well. I mean, that's just one coat that I've applied to the case, and it just does its thing. You roll it on with the crispy, crackly rollers, as I like to describe them, and it just appears as it does now.
Mm-hmm. You're going to go for another coat or leave it there?
Possibly. I'd most probably leave it as it is and then just do the odd touch-up.
Mm.
And it's very forgiving. There was some areas where I did have to do a slight second coat where it was...
Yeah.
As they say in the decorating trade, it was grinning.
It was grinning?
Yes. It's when you haven't applied enough paint and the underlying surface or the underlying colour is
smiling
still...
through.
Yes.
Got so it. That's a fun one.
It's grinning. But you can't really tell. It just goes on. But it dries pretty much the colour it is. It's a sort of silky...
Bobbly, silky black.
Bobbly, silky finish.
Yes, indeed. And you've got your blackboard paint on the inside, so it is stealth as you like. MDLR... Eat your heart out.
Obviously, haven't got any modules in it yet, but a black case, black rails, black modules, black patch cables.
Oh, yeah. You could put some little Velcro stuff in the lid to store your cables if it's unpatched.
And that would be black as well.
Of course it would. So what's left? You mentioned just some feet, and you've got some power supply shrouding to do so you don't zap yourself.
Yeah, I mean, not too much. I mean, I still regard this as a prototype as such. This is the second incarnation of a small case with a lid that I've made. I made one for Mark, which he may have mentioned he took to Bulgaria a couple of years ago. And this is the second one I've done, and I've refined the design somewhat, and I will continue to refine the design as we go forward when I build more of these, which will happen.
Nice one. If I do get back into modular, I might be tempted, though I would want a roughly half that width if rails can be found, because then it will be, and I'd go for a really shallow one with like a 4MS, just one of the module power supplies, just to keep it really shallow. That way, if you put little doobries,
so what you're talking
hardware about, things, but so it's an easily shoulder strappable little tiny case.
Are we talking about a 42U case or a 52U case?
Most likely in the 52 region. And yeah, two rows, 6U, 52 HP-ish, and slim. So for maximum portability.
And we're talking about very little stubby...
Really short rails. I don't imagine they're available. It might need some precision slicing.
Yeah, I haven't tackled cutting rails at this stage, but it's entirely doable.
Yeah, because all you'd probably just need to tap the holes that are normally on the end for the screws and make sure you've... Well, I've measured a lot.
I do tap them anyway on those.
Right.
They come untapped. I also trim the nut strips as well.
Yes, gotcha.
But it's just getting a nice clean cut.
I just keep staring at it.
Yeah.
It just looks great.
Yeah, I'm relatively pleased. I mean, the trouble is when you've been looking at something so closely for so long,
you can see all the flaws, I'm sure. But to me, it just exudes stealth. It's great.
Well, I can't wait to populate it and
bring it to a mod calf.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. No idea when they'll be, but they will be, and I'll let you know.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see if we're going into another lockdown or not. We'll be told later today.
Oh, will we?
Apparently so.
Great. What joy.
Anyway, other than that, I've also had a go on a Dreadbox Nymphs.
Oh, okay. Do tell. As I mentioned last episode, it is high on my list, potentially second place to the modal stuff, cobalt mainly. How was it?
Well, firstly, I want to say we knew it was small, but it was even smaller than I thought it was. It was very small.
Give us a hand signal. What kind of...
It's not much bigger, if not the same footprint, maybe, as a Typhon.
No way. But that is tiny.
But a lot thinner.
So it would easily fit on top of my MacBook, wouldn't it?
Yes, very easily.
Wow. Wow, okay.
It does that thing to me that happened a lot when I first started in modular, whereby... you saw a modular unit or a modular module mm-hmm. that you were interested in acquiring. And when you did acquire it, it was a lot smaller than you perceived it would be.
And then you think, how much did I spend on this again?
Yeah, exactly. But no, it is a very small unit, also very shallow.
Yeah, of course. Well, it's not much taller than just the USB type B that's on the back, is it?
No, I would say no more than an inch and a half.
Wow.
Imperial, or what's that, 3 centimetres?
Something like that.
That type of ballpark.
Mm. More importantly, how did it sound, feel?
It was okay, but it wasn't that intuitive when you just power it up.
Mm.
And you definitely come across this multifunction thing quite quickly.
Yeah, I did mention, I think the menu system is a little obscure.
I was only really tasked with doing some basic testing and just make sure the unit actually worked. And I kind of got caught up with the patch changing. That wasn't that easy. I mean, it did sound okay. I mean, it would really benefit from going through some effects processors.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, I didn't really get as long as I would have liked to on it. In fact, you really want to sit down with a unit for a couple of hours.
Yeah, you'd have to get over the hurdle of trying to navigate it first before you actually have fun.
And I most probably would have benefited from having some instructions or the manual to hand, which I didn't. But physically, it is well built.
As most Dreadbox stuff is.
I still maintain that if you weigh it up and thinking about the price point it sits at, the DeepMind 6 presents a much better value proposition than some tiny...
But it says Behringer on the front.
I know, we said that last week, but it's still interesting. It's just, if it could have been sub £300, possibly. I mean, I suppose they thought, well, it's 6-voice polyphony, we can charge this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if we've been selling a lot, but we certainly haven't sold out with this batch that we've got in. There seem to be plenty on the shelves, so I'm not sure how well it's been received.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's been so long since I played with the Abyss that I don't know if it lived up to what I liked about that one.
I have to say, some of the early Dreadbox modular, well, not modular,
the semi-modular thingies.
Yeah, some of the early Dreadbox desktop units, like the NYX.
The original NYX.
Yeah.
The square one.
And things like that, they were sort of more interesting because there was some effects.
Yeah, I think when they went to this newer, flatter design, I think they lost some of that really high-quality feel. I mean, the wooden end cheeks that they put on the Erebus V3 and that other one that escapes me, the NYX V2.
Yeah.
It just feels a little cheap.
I can see why they would want to do that. I mean, they want to scale things up. They want to sell more units. They want to make more profit. They are a business at the end of the day.
True.
So it's logical that they're going to optimize their manufacturing processes and inherently the designs of the units themselves.
Yeah.
We'll have to see. I'm ambivalent at the moment about, I would say.
A glowing review from Pete. Ambivalent about nymphs.
Yeah.
Well, I have some updates of my own because things have actually happened this week. I read Leviathan Wakes, the book that is the basis of the series called The Expanse. Are you familiar with that one?
I'm familiar with The Expanse. I've only watched a few episodes. Mm. I haven't sort of got drawn into the whole to series 6 now or something.
I have no idea. I did a quick Wikipedia, being very careful to avoid spoilers. I think the first book is season 1 and maybe a third to a half of season 2. But it was pretty cool. When I was looking, or just bringing up a tab to remind myself to talk about Leviathan Wakes, I was looking at the little synopsis in Wikipedia, and it says, is the first of the Expanse series of 6 or more or something books. And I don't know if I can be bothered, if I'm honest. It was decent. It certainly grabbed my attention.
So were they written prior to the series?
I believe so, yes.
And okay. The whole series?
Good question.
It's not one
I don't
of these
know the
where,
timeline.
Like the Game of Thrones, whereby...
They had to kind of make it up when they got to a certain point. Yeah, because George R. R. Martin hadn't finished it all. But I think he told them where he was kind of going, so in theory it should still be canon. Either way, I don't know about that situation with The Expanse, but it was cool. Would recommend. It ties up nicely enough at the end of the first book that I don't feel obliged to embark on a huge, what's the phrase, trilogy of 5, like The Hitchhiker's Guide, I don't know. Stay tuned. I'll let you know if I embark on the second one or not. Yes. I also went to visit my sister, who lives in Ipswich, and there is quite an excellent shop called Hopsters, which sells the craftiest and strangest of beers. Now, way back when, and I used to work in a craft beer and wine shop, which was one of the best jobs I've ever had, because we did tasting events where we got paid to drink, which was brilliant, and the staff had an agreement called Beer O'Clock, which got earlier and earlier in the day as I worked there, but we'd often eye up an interesting looking beer early in the day and say, sort of look at each other, side eye, this one, Beer O'Clock, and we'd all kind of split the cost and have a little tasting before we went home. When I was working that job, we'd always see many of the smaller breweries normally doing weird special edition kind of stuff. But sometimes they'd do a special edition beer and they'd put it in a 70 centilitre bottle, maybe put a cork in it and a wax seal and make it all fancy and nice presentation-wise. And we'd often see these come in, we go, oh, that's going to be our Beer O'Clock. And they're often 15, 20, 25 pounds even for these 70 centilitre bottles. But obviously we'd be splitting them, we'd have a staff discount, so it wasn't too bad. But we were never failed by a 70 centilitre beer. They were always interesting, delicious, or so horribly disgusting that the story was worth the price. And when I was at Hopsters in Ipswich, I did find an interesting one. This is by a brewery called Burning Sky, and it is a Saison style. I will quickly Google Saison so I can give you an accurate description of what a Saison is.
Kind of a Belgium type beer with that name, or
looks
some
like
other.
It might be a French origin. Let me have a quick look. Yes, Liège, Bière de Saison, I assume. From early 19th century, but it's a light farmhouse kind of style that will mature in the bottle. So light in colour, light in flavour normally. Most of the common ones that you'd find do end up going towards the lager style a little bit in flavour, but the good ones are often fruitier and less fizzy and overall more pleasant. But this one, brewed with greengages, promises to be incredibly tart, which has landed me with a problem. When I was at the shop, obviously we were sharing these 70 centilitre beers, and between three or four of us, so it was kind of fine. I don't know anybody who lives close, is a beer fan, and is also a beer fan who likes sour beers, which I do, and a sour beer is exactly what you imagine. It's a beer that is really quite sour. They're a favourite summer style of mine. They work really well with barbecues. But my problem is now that this beer is over 7%, and will only get stronger the longer I leave it. The best before is in 2031. If I can't find anybody who's actually going to enjoy it, I'm going to have to drink a wine bottle of 7% beer on my own.
Well, at least it's not a wine bottle full of wine, which is what's wine normally, about 15%.
Somewhere around there.
So it's not quite as...
It could be worse.
Does it have to be consumed in one sitting?
Yeah, it's not something you're going to be able to reseal adequately. It will probably go a bit strange.
Is it something that you could just sort of enjoy subtly throughout the day on maybe Christmas morning or something like that onwards?
Potentially. The problem is, now I've mentioned it's a summer or a barbecue beer and it's going to be at the back of my mind, I'm going to have to try and forget about it until it's in my season again.
So you have this in stock now, you purchased?
I purchased it because they're often limited, I want to say limited pressings, that's not how they make beer, but they're limited things, so they're really little special occasions, but I'll update you once it has been consumed.
So you don't feel that you can just hang on to it until barbecue season comes around again?
I don't know that I have the self-control, really.
They'll be calling you from the location you've stored it in.
Mm-hmm. It is right now. The other eventuality is that I open it and it actually turns out to be the first 70 centilitre beer to disappoint me. But I hope that doesn't happen. We'll find out. Last bit of news from my week is I did go on a bike ride with one of the friends from the gravel group. And the particular route that he took me on went through Thorpe Park. If you don't know, Thorpe Park is an amusement park, theme park here in the UK, one of the two big ones, I think. Not really a theme park person, so I don't know the ins and outs. But this is just a public right-of-way that goes right through the middle of, the lakes that it's,
Between the lakes.
Yeah, and it goes through kind of a graveyard of old bits of rides, which was really interesting. So you'd be cycling along and lots of autumn leaves everywhere, and then we just cycled past this row of, the kind of tractor tyre-y things that float along those sort of the water rides, those big round ones everyone's kind of facing in the middle.
Sort of donuts.
Yeah, giant donut kind of thing, but with proper big seating and strapped in and all that. There was a huge row of those. There was, I think you could see an entire disused roller coaster because of the amount of rust that was on that thing. I hope it's not still in use. But it was a cool perspective, actually, seeing the
I know the exact route
pieces.
That you're talking
do
about.
Do you know the one?
I do, because my friend Nigel and myself used to cycle it regularly.
Oh, nice. Yeah, and then it sort of links up with the M3
yes.
on the end. Yeah, and that's the
which,
one.
So which end did you approach it from?
The non-M3 one.
I'm so not... did you have to get over a kind of stile type thing at one
yeah,
end?
Yeah, a really big, like, vertical slab of stone. Is
yeah,
that the
and
one?
Then drop down. Mm-hmm. There's a pub just there that's very good.
Ooh, nice one. I'll look out for that.
That we
next
used
time.
To stop off. We invariably do it on maybe a nice sunny Sunday, and then we would stop for lunch at the pub
awesome.
And then come back a different way down the, I don't know what it's called, but it's the road that goes off to Staines, and we would head back towards the bridge that's isn't that going over the M25 it's not the
yeah there was a bridge I couldn't tell which road it was
yeah so yes know it very very well nice particularly because it goes through some other interesting territory because you've got lakes on both sides because the whole area between Chertsey and Staines on that approach was all gravel pits for
right
I don't know how long maybe 80-90 years maybe sort of dredging the gravel that the River Thames has laid down over
right
virtually hundreds of thousands of years. And on the actual lakes, you get a variety of activities, including water skiing, power boats, sailing boats, model sailing boats.
Oh, yeah.
It's just numerous waterborne activities.
Yeah. It actually looked like the water was really quite clear and clean there as well, which is surprising.
It's in good condition. Thorpe Park itself was built on a gravel pit. Mm. And there were various watery type features when it initially opened. I don't know how much emphasis there is now because
we definitely saw one of those inflatable watery assault course things.
And it had a big log flume, but it actually had the Disney-esque kind of ride on the sort of lake.
Oh yeah.
And I believe, I don't know if there's still an active gravel pit further up. I've lost all track of time, but I actually worked on one of the gravel pits.
Oh yeah.
Again, 40 years ago, I used to drive a tug.
Nice one. It was always good for the little bits of local knowledge that we get every so often. Nice. Linking them up. Is that it? That is it. That's my week. We've got some news. Which one do we want first? Let's go for the one that actually has some legs to it. Mine is very, very short. Fire away, Pete. What have we got here?
Well, this one came across my attention just this morning, to be really honest. I was perusing YouTube, as I do regularly, and this just fell into my feed. There was a demonstration being carried out by the manufacturers explaining basically how it works. And I thought, well, that's an interesting design. So it's from the manufacturer Twisted Electrons. And the item is called a Blast Beats, and it's described as a synthesizer stroke groove box. I believe based again on one of these early chips.
Yeah, that you find on a Sound Blaster card, apparently, one of those add-in cards for PCs, I think.
Yeah, well, in the day when you had
MS-DOS era, apparently.
Yeah, you had to add sound cards if you wanted sound on your PC.
Yeah, gotcha.
And they've pushed the limits on it quite heavily. Mm-hmm. I believe they've said that it was notorious to program back in the day, but they've seemed to have got the maximum that it's possible to get out of it. So it's a bit like the previous incarnation. They had made an FM synthesis type unit, which we did talk about, and I can't remember which episode that was.
No, it was a good while ago, but I think that seems to be kind of their thing, because they had another one, I think it's called the Therapsid, which will be like the Electron SID station. It'll be the SID bit of the name. It is in reference to some kind of computer chip, I believe.
But it's got quite comprehensive output, so it's got 6 drum tracks and 4 synth tracks, 2 monophonic and 2 duophonic.
So drum tracks will be bass, snare, tom, closed and open hats, and a cymbal as well.
So I assume that's all being generated, unless they've got some sort of modelling.
I assume, given the way it's sort of formatted, that will all be available simultaneously.
Yes.
Yeah, lots of, well, you've got in your sequencer 64 steps, patterns, and you can do songs, which is cool. You can save 100 kits. Let's have a look. What else we got? Lots of faders for your interface with the device. You've also got those wonderful clicky-clacky buttons that you find on Dave Smith stuff. Wait, no. Sequential, of course. It's sequential once more. Love those clicky buttons.
And Roland's originally. Old Roland's.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, of course. Yeah, you've got that groove box next door, haven't you? With those clicky buttons. Or at least one of them.
And Korg as well would use those buttons originally.
Yeah, I do like those. But it looks pretty cool. And one thing I think Twisted Electrons do really well is trying to make FM hands-on and visual rather than number-based and stuck in menus, which is super cool because we know it's such a versatile synth technique. It's good to have a different approach for it.
Well, there's absolutely no menus at all on this unit.
Love it.
And an excessive amount of sliders. So you have, or faders, I should say, you have 56 faders. So they haven't skimped there.
Not at all.
And that kind of feeds back into what we were talking about, the nymphs and how much it costs. Because this thing, I've only got the UK price for it, but £503. So
similar ballpark.
For possibly a lot more functionality.
Totally. And with that much synth power, it's fully Groovebox, not just drum machine.
Yeah, exactly.
Listeners, if you want to find out the FM we were talking about, it's the Twisted Electrons Mega FM, which is based on the YM2612 chip, and it's kind of dirty and evil FM, quite lo-fi in certain places, but that's a pretty cool one. But back to the blast beats, you've also got four separate outputs, which I believe you can assign, which is pretty handy if you want to do a bit more on the mixing, you know, add some reverb to your synth, but not your drums, etc. And SD card, I assume, for saving stuff.
So on the whole, I think this is somewhat interesting, or quite interesting, because of the different design mythology, so to speak. The control surface is dramatically different to anything else that seems to be on the market at the moment.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of things without screens, assuming the button systems are done nicely. One thing to mention as well that will definitely increase its power is you've got per-step modulation and automation for all your parameters, so you can get even more mileage out of, let's say you wanted an extra percussive voice, you could definitely use one of your synths to do that.
I'm not sort of suggesting I'm going to order one straight away. They're only available to pre-order at the moment anyway, but I would like to have a go on one at least.
Totally. Unfortunately, our music shop, the local one, doesn't stock them, but hopefully see if a modcaffer might pick one up. We've definitely got some Yamaha and FM fans kicking about.
Do you have any recall of where these guys hail from at all?
No, but I've got their website open. Let me have a gander.
The gentleman narrating on the video I saw was very English in his accent, but I got the impression that these guys might be from Europe because they were quoting euros, and it only seemed to be able to be pre-ordered from Thomann and Music Store.
Head office is located in France.
Okay, well, that explains it.
Yeah, just looking on the legal page of their website. Yeah, France, and more France.
Very France.
Yep. But no, they've got some really cool stuff, including some really affordable little bits. And it does seem to be that taking vintage sound generation chips and just rinsing the everything out of them, that's kind of their jam. So one that you could look at, or two that you could look at, actually, you've got the Happy NES, 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 that sound chip. That's in a really small little kind of chiptune synthesizer that they make with four voices, which is pretty cool. You can get this properly built up into a chassis, or I think the original versions were literally just PCB mounted things. So that's that kind of visual there. They've also got the Therop Kid, which is inspired by their Therop SID. And let's see, it is SID 6581. Or potentially the 8580. That's the chip they're kind of based on. But they have a pretty good design language going, I think. They're all kind of dark, utilitarian aluminium boxes, and they're very utilitarian. But I mean that in a good way. They're cool looking machines. They do actually have a module, Eurac module as well, which is an 8-way switch multiplexer kind of addressable mixing routing device, which is pretty cool. It's called the Octopus. Ooh, I think I also might have spoken about the Acid 8 and Crazy 8 sequencer way back in the past as well. But yeah, check them out. Twisted Electrons. They do some pretty cool stuff. One more bit of news, potentially future release on this one. Instruo. We do love a bit of Instruo, or I love a bit of Instruo anyway. I don't know if it's ever been for sale before, but I've definitely seen it in Instruo videos. There is a preamp called Ire, maybe? I don't know. It's all these Gaelic words that are very confusing. This one is, at the top, a Combi XLR jack. You have Phantom Power available, and it looks pretty standard, but you've got some useful utilities, a polarity switch or phase switch, depending on how you want to call it. You've got a low cut. You've got an envelope follower with attack and release controls. You have a gain and a big level control on the bottom, and also CV inputs for most likely the level control, I'm guessing there. Cool little bit. It's Instruo. We like Instruo, so it's probably going to be cool, but that's only a prototype on Modular Grid, so keep your eyes peeled on that one. Also, More Instro news while I'm here. Got a message just earlier from Anthony from the mod CAF. There are more Instro modules available on VCVRack. If you're a virtual modular person, let me fetch the details for you. So, Instro stuff. You've got Troika, the triple oscillator, standard subtractive or Moog style, I suppose. You then have Tri, I think that's how it's pronounced, which is a low-pass filter. You've got Toner, which is a wavefolder-equipped oscillator. Harmonaig, which is the four-channel quantizer that works in a diatonic way, which is pretty cool. You've got Saze, which is an ADSR. VinCA, Dual VCA. TanH, which is a wave shaper and limiter. CSL, the complex oscillator. TSL, the smaller, very West Coasty oscillator, which actually TSL stands for Tiny Source Later. That's a reference from an old DivKid live stream. You've got IO47, which is a vaguely ARP-inspired filter. You've got Athru Wavefolder, a dual fader module, TAG or something, which is the sample and hold. Instro's Oct with DivKid again there. You've got Tane, which is a switch utility module. Psyche, which is the super cool quad oscillator. Leon, which is a matrix mixer. A 1F fader module. Neone, which is a through zero oscillator. And lastly, AAS, which is a logic module. And you've got some good stuff on VCVRack, should you want it. There we go. It's the end of the news. And we got to round this one off, as we always do, because we're creatures of habit like that. It's miscellaneous multimedia recommendation time. Okay, for my miscellaneous multimedia recommendation, I'm going to pass on one. It's a book recommendation, and I haven't read it, so I don't know if it's going to be amazing. But this was recommended and lent to me by my sister, and I do trust her opinion on the classic sci-fi world, as she is a massive book and English and reading nerd. Here we go. It's an Arthur C. Clarke, so you know it's going to be some of the good stuff. This one is The City and the Stars. I don't see why I would ever not read an Arthur C. Clarke book if someone handed it to me. So there we go. You can read it with me, and I'll report back probably next week, because I have a lot of time on my hands these days.
Okay, got one.
Nice.
I know that we're all relatively interested in space and that type of thing, astrophysics or space engineering, is it?
Definitely.
And we're always interested to see what Luke has to tell us when he comes on and does his spacey bits.
One of my favourite bits.
One of the particular areas I'm quite fond of is the latest cutting-edge astrophysics, you know, the new discoveries, what they've found, or maybe some deep information on something that I'm mostly currently aware of, but not to that level. And the particular YouTube channel that I find quite interesting, because the videos are short and sweet, just really focus on one thing. The title of the channel is called Deep Sky Videos.
Nice.
All the people that contribute to the YouTube channel are all astrophysicists. Mm-hmm. So they're not amateurs. They're all professionals or university professors, etc., etc. And they'll feature one particular galaxy or a star cluster or something like that. And they just kind of lay it out on that particular subject for roughly 5 to 10 minutes.
Bite-sized.
Yeah, easily to digest. It's not too heavy, but they'll go into more detail than some cursory
headline.
You know, here's a picture of a galaxy and this is its name. So they'll talk about its formation, its history, you know, what we know about it, etc., etc.
Nice.
Definitely worth a watch if you're into astrophysics at all. And that's my recommendation for this week. Deep Sky Videos, all one word, on YouTube.
Lovely stuff. Listeners, it's probably going to be the festive period, or maybe not be your festive period when this podcast goes up. But if you are taking a holiday, I hope you enjoy it, and we'll probably catch you maybe for one episode, and then another one will be in another new year. We'll see you then, and you stay safe. Farewell.